97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
Welcome to Second Amendment Radio, The Great Outdoors. I'm Mark Cox, along with Bo Matthews.
Present.
And Carl Middleman.
Hello, everyone.
Glad to be here.
Welcome back, Bo.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you guys for covering me last week. I had a little something to take care of. I do some posting on Facebook. And Mark, you've referenced my big stack of firewood. I had five dump trucks from a buddy of mine that donated them to me. Not donated, but gave them to me. He didn't have a use for them. And my goal was to process it. And I got it done right before my procedure. So that was a lot of work.
Yeah, I have to tell you, if the crap ever hits the fan, I'm going to Bo's house if I need firewood. Because it's impressive.
Well, it's definitely been some work. Thanks for covering me last week, and a lot going on. We're going to talk to Alex Salzman from the Missouri Firearm Coalition. She is one of the sharpest people I know, sharpest Americans I know about gun laws, and you've had her on your show several times. How long have you known her?
She's a great patriot. It's been at least 5 or 6 years
I
first became acquainted with her, and we've talked about SAPA for a long time, the Second Amendment Preservation Act. The Missouri Firearms Coalition and other groups have been working on this for a long time. As you're probably aware by now, the governor signed the bill last weekend, and they've kind of been celebrating that because it's been a long road. And it was in, I believe, she'll correct me on this if I'm wrong, it was like in the last hour of the last day of the session. So really,
yes.
They drug this thing out
to
the end.
The House did it the day before. So the second to last date, and then the Senate did it like the very last thing on their agenda.
You know what? They got it done. That's all
right.
I'm worried about.
It's true.
So we're going to talk to Alex, and also a buddy of mine, Brian Davis. I saw him on Facebook with a fish I've never seen before, and he called it a 45-pound black drum. So we'll find out what it took to get that whale into his boat, but a great picture. Maybe we can get that shared on Facebook.
It looked like a carp to me, but he says it was a drum. You know, I can remember specifically, as a kid, we used to go to Dale Hollow Lake down in, it borders parts of Kentucky and Tennessee, and we used to go down there and we'd rent a houseboat every year.
Yeah.
And we'd stay on that houseboat for a week, and we'd go all over that lake. But what you couldn't prevent in those big steel-hulled houseboats, those drum would get under that houseboat at night, and they'd click those stones together that they have in the drums, have a stone in the top of their head, these stones, and they make a clicking sound.
What?
And you could hear that reverberating through the whole boat.
Oh, my goodness.
And I'm thinking, if that's really a drum and it's that big, I mean, he could start his own band. That thing is huge.
Just need some cowbell.
Oh,
we're gonna find out what that story is about.
Need more cowbell, always.
Don't we always?
Ding, ding, ding.
Speaking of, and he caught that fish in the Ohio River, so we got into a conversation about float trips with my fellow co-host on St. Louis Talks. And Ryan Recker has been on one float trip, and it was a horrible experience, and he'll never do it again. And that's what people do around these parts.
Oh, man.
And I know, and Carol says she's been on banks of rivers but never has floated. I remember in Minnesota we'd float, and they would have, because you'd have beer cans or soda cans, and they would have targets on the side of the river. This is probably before, you know, EPA got involved, but you would fill up that can with water after you drank the contents,
right,
and throw it to the target as you were floating by in your tube. And it was a great moneymaker for the people that, you know, collected those cans.
Mm-hmm.
Even aluminum back in that day was worth something. But I loved float trips. I've always had great experiences. Have you ever done float trips?
Oh, for years and years. I used to live in the upstate of South Carolina.
Oh,
worked,
wow,
in television down there for a while in Greenville-Spartanburg. And in northern Georgia was just, it was like the wilds. It was just beautiful. Remember the movie Deliverance? Because Ned Beatty died.
Ned Beatty just died,
right? I'm thinking
that was his first movie.
Yep.
I hear a banjo in my head when I think
as
of Ned Beatty. Yeah, yeah. So that was supposedly took place in Alabama somewhere, but it was actually filmed on the Chattooga River in northern Georgia.
Really?
Years ago. Because they have like class 5 rapids there, and that's where they went and they filmed this. But further down the river, down near like Clayton, Georgia, it smooths out. And my very first big float trips were on that river. It was just gorgeous, right? Loved it. And then there were others that I had so much to drink, I don't have many memories of. Yeah. But
were the drinking floats in Missouri?
I've done that too. Yeah.
Oh, but absolutely. you did drinking floats down there too.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
I think it kind of goes
floating,
hand in
you're
hand.
Drinking, right?
But
I mean, come on.
I will say,
not if you're a kid.
This is
I wasn't old.
This is to prove, close to.
I was old. Then. Yeah.
Close to of age. But this is to prove that Mark Cox is kind to the local people.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't find him out in the woods.
Thank you.
You were not the subject of deliverance. Wow.
I'm going to Ned Beatty you.
I am not going to tell you about the time where I wiped. Well, I went floating a lot more when I was younger, underage. And so this is when I didn't sunburn. And so I would be out in the sun all the time. There's the time where I got bit in the butt by a fish. There's the time that I had to go and relieve myself outside of the water and wiped with poison ivy. Then there's the time. Sorry about that.
You have it cataloged.
I remember it because they're all nightmares. And then there's the time that I stayed home while my parents went floating and threw a huge party in South St. Louis
nice.
That people still talk about.
Wow.
And that's
you're that guy.
And but then I started to go again. Once you find out that you can drink on the river, I've gone the White Rapids in Colorado. Those are great too.
You're not doing a lot of floating and drinking on those things.
No, you're not, because you have to pay attention or else you'll die.
It's working. You know, the reason I wanted to bring up float trips, because it seems like there have been so many drownings in the rivers in our region, mm-hmm. and it's frightening. And my wife asked me, she goes, is it mostly kids? I said, no, it's everybody. I think the guy that passed away just last weekend was 51, thought he was an adequate swimmer. Undertow just sucked him down. And I mean, it's just amazing and very sad.
I just don't know why people don't always wear life jackets. And now, honestly, when I'm on a canoe
but
or I'm
Mark,
on a raft
I'm an
and I'm
adult.
Floating,
I don't need to.
I'm not wearing a life jacket when I'm on the boat. The kids always have one on when we go. We insist they keep it on.
Absolutely.
Because they're going to jump off in the water and swim mm-hmm. and get back on. It's just common sense. You know, as a reporter at Channel 4 years ago, I'll never forget covering that story out of Castlewood where those
yeah.
four kids died in the same incident.
Yeah.
One went in to save the other, and they all passed away, which is unfortunate. Those rivers are dangerous. They change from year to year. The currents change the way the channels run.
Right.
You just can never take for granted, because you've been there before, that it's going to be safe the next time you're there.
It's serious business. You know, and the first responders, God bless every one of them, that you know, go in and try to find the victim yeah. or the bodies or whatever. But we're not, you know, it's not even just the floating dangers. It's the boating dangers. The guy down at the Merrimack, you know, I guess there's a famous rock on the Merrimack that if you can see this, the water is low and you got to be really careful. And I don't know if you saw the story, but the boat hit that rock.
At night?
Oh, okay.
It was dark.
Well, didn't know
apparently
that part.
They couldn't see it.
But what are they doing, you know, flying down the river?
Thank you.
So drinking and boating don't go together. Drinking and floating.
But now hold on a second. You need to stay hydrated because it's hot out there. We're getting record temperatures.
Yeah.
Stay hydrated. Have a bottle of water with every beer.
Be safe because after all, it is Father's Day weekend. We want to make sure people are
happy Father's Day.
If they're on the river, if they're canoeing, if they're boating, whatever you're doing, just be safe.
Yeah. Happy Father's Day to you guys.
Happy Father's Day.
It is one of those things that you just got to really be careful. Of course, floating and drinking goes hand in hand. It's part of it.
But be smart and be safe.
Can you really be?
You can. I've heard it done.
There is nothing worse. Can we agree that there is nothing worse than a low, slow moving river?
I would agree.
You got to work.
And
when
hung over with a sunburn.
Yeah. when that 6-mile float trip takes 12 hours because the water's just not moving.
That's
right?
How I got bit in the butt by a fish. The water wasn't moving.
Okay.
The fish
that's
thought
why.
I was food.
Well, at least it wasn't a shark. I have a pond on my property, and I used to swim laps in it. You know, when we've all gone up and down and weight and all that stuff. Well, I did that. I was working out, and I was swimming in my pond, and my dog would swim with me back and forth. We'd do laps across this thing. And I was out there one day, and I had a carp bite my nipple. I'm done swimming in my leg. Anyway, so be careful out there.
Yeah. He might have been skinny dipping, Carl. We just don't know.
No, I was not.
But it's his pond, and it's out in the woods, so nobody saw it. It's all okay, all right? It's good.
All right. We're going to talk to Alex Salzman coming up next from the Missouri Firearm Coalition on Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors. Thank you for tuning in.
More cowbell, everyone.
Times have come.
gun-toting woman right there. Second Amendment Radio on the Great Outdoors. I'm Bo Matthews, along with Mark Cox. And thanks again. I know we're into the show, but I want to thank you again for covering last week.
Hey, Bo, we all need time off on occasion, buddy. It's all right.
But I'm the new guy. I should get no days off. Got a lot going on. In this segment, it is brought to you by Razorback Armory, St. Louis's top shop for everything. Guns and ammo on Manchester Road in De Pere, just a half mile east of 270. Find them at RazorbackArmory.com. Go in and see Jesse and Brad and the crew. They'll take good care of you. And, yeah, lots of things happening in this Second Amendment world.
Yeah, SAPA is a big deal. It's also law now in the state of Missouri. If you don't know what that stands for, it's the Second Amendment Preservation Act, and we're fortunate enough to have with us on the Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors this week one of the people at the center of this fight. That is Alex Salzman with the Missouri Firearms Coalition, and they've been after this for a few years, finally got it done. And Alex, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Great to have you on here. I know you guys are probably still celebrating, but there's still more to do. We'll get to all that in a minute. First of all, what did it feel like the day you saw the governor sign SAPA?
Well, we were shocked, to be honest. It was definitely not a sure deal up until the ink was dry. So we were very, very pleasantly surprised. We took nothing for granted. We never assumed for a minute that it would go through until it actually did. And we were just incredibly proud of the members of the Missouri Firearms Coalition for finally getting this across the finish line.
And were you present at the signing or no?
No, we sent our political director and some of our other guys down there over to Lee's Summit. That's on the other side of the state. So I was holding down air traffic control and doing all of the communications that day.
Yeah. So for people who have maybe heard about this the last couple years, but don't know the details, just lay it out for them, Alex. What does this do to protect our Second Amendment rights in Missouri?
Well, basically what the Second Amendment Preservation Act did was declare any federal gun laws that restrict the use of our firearms within the state of Missouri, we're going to be unenforceable by Missouri officers, meaning that we weren't going to use any resources, any financial resources or manpower to enforce gun control laws. And that includes gun control acts, laws, whether they were passed in the past, present, or future. No new taxes, registration requirements, prohibition on possession, orders of confiscation. All of that stuff is now not enforceable in the state of Missouri, similar to the federal marijuana laws.
Alex, when was the first talk of the SAPA rule or the bill, if you will? Like, how long ago did somebody go, we need to have the Second Amendment Preservation Act? Was it 3 years ago? How long of a fight has this been?
This has definitely been an ongoing fight for the better half of a decade already.
Wow.
And the language has changed over time. The reason we are so proud of the SAPA bill that we were able to actually finally get through was the fact that we've got some real teeth in this bill. There's a mechanism for enforcement that has been lacking in not only our SAPA bills in the past, but SAPA bills that have been presented and passed all over the country. So we actually have a manner of recourse for citizens that have their rights violated here, and that has been unseen so far to date. So it not only is the best SAPA bill, you know, the best thing we could have done to protect Missourians this year, but it's the strongest SAPA bill in the country. So we're incredibly proud of the progression and what we were able to get accomplished this year.
Yeah, you know, I think it's interesting, Alex, because, you know, I had the governor on my program when this thing was still sitting there being looked at, and he said he supported it, but it still had to go through some hoops. So I'm guessing he was waiting on his attorneys to sign off on it. Was that your impression? Because you said you weren't taking anything for granted when you were waiting to get this signed.
Yep, and there's always the story of why we've got to delay the vote, right? So when it came down to it, all of the Republicans in Jefferson City made this feel like it was a done deal and they worked really hard for it or whatnot. But keep in mind that SAPA didn't pass until the last hour of the last day of session this year, right? It came down to the very wire with everyone saying that, oh, yeah, of course we'll do it, of course we'll do it, don't worry about it, the entire time. So knowing that we had now been sitting there for weeks, it being on the governor's desk, we weren't going to take anything for granted because he could have just as easily have vetoed this or ignored it as well. So we kept the pressure up. The members of the Missouri Firearms Coalition are fire-breathing dragons when it comes to protecting the Second Amendment. They kept calling. They kept emailing. Everything on social media. Nobody could go anywhere from the governor's office without being strongly encouraged to get that SAPA bill signed. And I really honestly feel that it was the outside pressure that made it so nobody had a choice. They had to get this done for us this year, and that was because of all of the communication to the governor's office and to the legislature before that.
Yeah, that's great. You know, of course, I knew this would happen the minute this got signed because the progressives, the moms against guns, all the crazies came out of the woodwork, including their friends at the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. And they ran to the federal government and said, hey, what about this bill? And, of course, the Biden Justice Department was happy to trot out somebody an acting attorney general who claims that this thing is in violation of the U.S. Constitution's supremacy clause. What's your reaction to that, Alex?
Well, this isn't based on the supremacy clause. This legislation is based on the anti-commandeering doctrine. You know, and that says that the federal government cannot simply commandeer the state's legislative process or force its agenda on the states. So we've got over 170 years worth of precedent baked into this bill. That's definitely something that we have thought of. The bill is written in a manner in which we're playing on the anti-commandeering doctrine. I don't think that we're going to have any troubles at all. If we have the right to tell the federal government that we're not going to enforce their federal marijuana laws, we have every right to tell the federal government that we're not going to enforce their gun control laws.
I hope that is true. In the article I read, it said Missouri's law would subject law enforcement agencies with officers who knowingly enforce any federal laws to a fine of about $50,000 per officer that violates this. There's another chink in the armor when it comes to young people wanting to become police officers or even seasoned police officers. This is frightening if that could happen. Is that true?
Well, yeah, absolutely. If they are knowingly violating the rights of the citizens, then their department should absolutely be fined. We want to encourage good, strong law enforcement officers with integrity, but the one thing that we don't need is law enforcement officers that are feeling pressured to go ahead and enforce the laws coming out of these big cities. So the reason that is in the bill, that is the enforcement mechanism. That is what's going to keep the law enforcement communities in the middle of St. Louis or Kansas City that maybe have the Democrat prosecutors. That's what's going to keep them from actually just ignoring SAPA altogether. They're going to be fined if they violate the Second Amendment rights of their citizens.
Yeah, and I think importantly here, just to clarify, the fine would be levied against the agency, not the individual officers, correct? That was a clarification in the bill.
Yes, that is correct.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I thought so. I think you and I talked about that the other day. So good. So this thing had an emergency clause in it. It's in effect right now that the governor signed it.
I think this is huge. Alex, do you know Patrick Holland personally?
No, I don't believe so. The name kind of sounds familiar.
Okay, well, it just shows how big the circle of Second Amendment supporters there are. We had him on recently. He's from Truth, Money, and Freedom podcast, and he said the way this SAPA bill is designed, it is, and you sound very happy with how it is written, even at this, you know, this stage. It's going to be a great example for other states to follow this example in their states to protect their own Second Amendment laws.
That is correct, and we're already seeing that. There were a lot of states that had their own SAPA language going through their representative chambers. A lot of them were looking to see, were we actually going to do this, or was this just, you know, a lot of hot air? And the fact that we've actually got it signed by the governor is going to give a lot of cover for those pro-gun groups in other states to make sure that their legislatures do this too. So their precedent has been set now, and now it's off to the races. I think that we will see stronger SAPA bills and more states coming out with their first SAPA bills in greater numbers next session and the one after that.
Yeah, we're talking to Alex Saltzman from the Missouri Firearms Coalition. You know, Alex, the timing on this just about couldn't have been better. I just got done reading an article from maybe June 7th or 8th that the Biden Department of Justice had outlined basically their gun confiscation plans, right? In other words, red flag laws or emergency court orders that would allow somebody to go in and seize weapons from someone's person or from their home. And basically what they've done is soften these things up to the point that in many cases it can be done without the individual being present. You know, you worry immediately about whether or not equal justice is being played out here, you know, due process, if you don't have the right to argue anyone. In other words, anyone can go in and make a claim, and a judge can decide you're a danger and you need to have your guns taken away.
Yeah, absolutely. The proceedings that determine whether or not you're stripped of your firearms happen in complete secret. And these gun seizure orders will be issued before you've got before you've been convicted or charged with anything. You don't have to have a criminal background at all, and you can have your firearms seized before you've ever set foot in the courtroom. And the big thing is the evidentiary standards that they're reducing this to. This is a God-given inalienable right to bear arms, and we're taking it from the criminal court proceedings, which would be a beyond all reasonable doubt measure, and we're just reducing that to a preponderance of the evidence in civil court, which is just like a 50-50 chance that he could be guilty type of thing. That's not strong enough by any means when we're talking about your Second Amendment rights. So there are a lot of really dangerous problems with these red flag gun confiscation laws, no matter how you spin them. Even the Republican approved red flag laws that are coming out of some of the more moderate Republicans, they're full of holes. They should absolutely be regarded as very dangerous proposals. And while we are definitely not going to have to deal with the federal red flag stuff because of the SAPA bill we just passed, red flag laws is something that sneaks up into every Missouri legislative session as well. If they don't at least hear this bill every year in committee, they'll try to tag this language on to bills dealing with domestic violence, or they'll try to get it in and sneak it in somewhere else. So we have to be vigilant when we talk about these red flag gun confiscation orders, because they are incredibly, incredibly dangerous, and they can creep up on you in places you wouldn't expect.
It is frightening to think of red flag laws on how flimsy it is. It could be just me saying, hey, that guy over there, I don't trust him. He's got too many guns, whatever. And then jack up the courts. You have all these cases that would be stacked up, wouldn't be able to get through them. The frightening thing is all these people are trying to sell their homes and move to other areas. How do you know about your neighbors? You know, how do you know who they are? You're going to want to move out in the woods like I live, because we've seen already a lot of Californians moving to Texas. And guess what? They're just not bringing their furniture. They're bringing their ideals with them to change some of these red states to blue or vice versa. And well, not vice versa, but you know what I'm saying. And it's also frightening. I saw a report, Mark, that Lori Lightfoot in Chicago, the big picture, and once in a while, is it just somebody says something and just, wow, that's what's happening. Defund the police. They're getting big trouble. Lots of murders. It's scary. Then the national police has to come in and take over. Well, what does that look like? That's right out of 1984.
We have a national police?
Well,
federal police, right?
It could be created quickly, but bear
in mind, those same federal police that Lori Lightfoot's asking for during the Trump administration, they were referred to as jackbooted federal thugs. Remember that?
Right.
So how quickly the worm turns. So, you know, Alex, you got to pay attention.
Another point that you made, that if they tie up the courts, and then when there's an actual red flag that somebody needs to be red flagged, there'll be so many cases ahead of that flag that person's gun won't be taken away, and he'll go on a spree.
Potentially.
And so when it's supposed to be actually used correctly, and if everything's frivolous, it won't work like it's supposed to.
Right, and where's the manpower to go and confiscate all these guns or what? I don't know. It's the red flag thing is just frightening to me. But Alex, congratulations.
Let's make, a,
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say you make a really good point with the false accusations. False accusations are a real thing, and they're a real problem. You know, we've got over 700,000 false accusations every year with divorce and custody disputes. We all saw what happened to Kavanaugh, and with cancel culture the way it is right now, those are things that we seriously have to consider when we're offering the power to strip someone of the Second Amendment rights because of your opinion of your neighbor or your neighbor's opinion of you. We're not in a place in society right now where we can afford to just go on the honor system and do the preponderance of the evidence in civil court. Red flags are a horrible idea for a whole host of reasons, and we'll keep our eye on it for sure. It's definitely not going anywhere.
Oh, we know the Missouri Firearms Coalition's not done, so you've got SAPA in the rearview mirror now. What are you working on for the next legislative session?
Well, like I was just saying, we're always going to be paying attention to the red flag language that they will be trying to maneuver in any way they can. I think we all have seen Mark McCloskey, the pink shirt guy from St. Louis. He's now running for office. His origin story really brings to light that we've got some strengthening of our castle doctrine that we need to work on. Everybody remembers that he and his wife stood out on his porch with their firearms to protect their home and themselves from the protesters and everybody that was charging down the street. The fact that he got in so much trouble, that he was charged, that he went through a legal nightmare just because they were trying to protect themselves, means that we've got some serious strengthening to do there. So we're definitely going to be taking a closer look at our castle doctrine to see what we can do there. And then we still have about a dozen or so gun-free zones in the state of Missouri that we've been trying to get rid of for quite some time that we're going to continue to push on. We've got bill sponsors in the House and Senate again next year to end the gun-free zones that we've got. So we'll be marching forward with that, too, next year.
Good.
I would like to add in, for those people that are listening intently to this conversation, because this has been a big couple of weeks here for the state of Missouri, and the story doesn't end. I mean, it keeps, you know, shifting and pivoting. Alex, how can good, law-abiding, Second Amendment-supporting Americans truly help you? Like, truly, you know, is it simply writing the governor? Is it simply just contacting you? Is there a donation that needs to be made? And I mean this because people are driving down the road or listening right now going, what can I do as a citizen? What can I do to help this woman, Alex, you know, keep this fight going?
Well, you nailed them all. What we do is...
I'm awesome. I win.
We gather all like-minded gun owners, and we make sure that we're all taking the same move or the same action at the same time. So join us. Go to MissouriFirearmsCoalition.org. Sign up for our email so that you get updates. And then what happens is we will get to session, and we will all push for the same bill, and we will let them know as a united voice what gun owners in Missouri want to see as far as gun policy coming out of Jefferson City. And then come election time, we will let everyone know, the politicians from Jefferson City, whether they have the R or the D behind their name. We will let everyone know and spend a lot of money letting their constituents know where they stood and how strong they stood on the Second Amendment. So if that sounds like something you want to get involved in, if you're passionate about the Second Amendment, join us. MissouriFirearmsCoalition.org.
Well put. Alex Saltzman, thanks for your hard work on this, and thank everyone involved as well. We appreciate you.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, it's fantastic. And do you guys, before you go, do you guys do events, like live events where we get together and we talk about these things? Is there conferences, anything like that? Or is this all, can everybody support this virtually?
Oh, everybody can do this where you're at. It's action in your backyard. So we do a lot of live streaming. We've certainly, when the session is in, we will be live streaming from the Capitol. But yeah, these are actions that you can take from wherever you are. And we do a lot of surveys before bill pre-filing that try to take take the temperature of our members, which of the gun pieces of legislation, the gun proposals, they would most like us to see either whack down or try to get through. So we definitely have got email programs that we can figure out where everybody wants to go.
Okay.
But yeah, it's an action where you're at type of thing.
All right. Congratulations on the hard work, Alex. Yeah, thank you so much, Alex.
We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. You're listening to the Second Amendment Radio in the Great Outdoors. I'm Mark Cox. He's Bo Matthews. That's Carl Middleman. We're going to be back in just a minute. Hopefully you found a place to stay cool and maybe get a line in the water this weekend. It's hot enough out there for sure. Welcome back to the Second Amendment Radio in the Great Outdoors. I'm Mark Cox along with Bo Matthews.
And we are going to go outdoors. You know, you scroll walls and you see people posting pictures and sometimes it catches you off guard. And so we're going to talk to a buddy of mine, a guy that I've known for years, that had the goofiest looking picture and smile on his face. This segment for the Great Outdoors is brought to you by Chuck's Boots in Fenton and St. Peter's, and now online at chucksboots.com. Tell them Bo sent you when you go to Chuck's Boots. Brian Davis and I are, I guess you would say, colleagues from many years, worked together on some projects before. And so I'm scrolling my wall, Brian, the other day, and I see this fishing trip you're on with a black drum. Is that the name or the kind of the fish you're holding? Because this thing is about almost as tall as you.
Yeah, I believe so, Bo. Very well, after my fishing buddies had, scrutinized the photo to make sure, it was accurate.
It wasn't photoshopped.
Yeah, right. Some of the guys think it may have very well been a buffalo, but you know what? It was just a really big fish, and it was a heck of a wild ride there for a minute.
Well, I have to tell you, Mark, you may not know Brian, but Brian is the guy, and I'm not a deer hunter because I'm married to a vegetarian. I am a carnivore, but he is the guy that will go deer hunting and then give me deer meat. And
after.
So he's that guy.
You need a friend like that.
But yeah. I don't want anything.
Everybody needs a friend like that.
I don't want a package of any of this 45-pound black drum. Number one, what were you fishing for, Brian?
I was actually fishing I've been in a little club for like the last, 25, 30 years that we go out fishing, just a bunch of guys. We're fishing for bass, so not like the big bass tournaments you see on the TV where you win a boat. You may win a couple $100 if you win those. But anyhow, we were fishing the Ohio River, and I was just out on the main river just kind of cranking a little crankbait along through the stumps, and I'd thrown up there, and I seen something swirl. I told my partner, I said, boy, I think I just missed something big. And so I threw back up in there, and I didn't miss it that time. He came flying out of the water, airborne, straight towards the main river. I told my partner, I said, well, hold on, here we go.
Yeah, we got to know, Brian, because the fishermen out there are going to be wondering. So if you're bass fishing, you got a fairly light pole to begin with, and what kind of pound test were you using? Were you worried at some point this thing was going to outdo your equipment?
Oh, sure. Yeah, no, it's I use a 6 foot, 6 foot six medium heavy rod with a 15 pound, test on it. So it's pretty durable, but it's not, it's not designed for 45, 50 pound fish, but they had the drag set right. And, just quite a long little fight there, but it was we had a lot of laughs, that's for sure, trying to get that thing in.
I bet. And then when you saw it, when you got it out of the water and in your hands, 45 pound fish, when you're bent over the side of a boat to get that out, that's some work. Did you have a little help?
Well, I have a dip net, but it annihilated that dip net. I had to put it in head first, and it ripped half the dip net apart. So I just grabbed the dip net on both sides and just kind of flopped it up on my deck. And
there's some there's some goofy looking fish out there that are so fun to catch. We've got carp in our pond, and I swear it's in relation to you and your black drum fish. It's probably three quarters of the size of my wife, or the height of my wife standing there. So these things are about 3.5 foot long, but they are so fun to catch.
Yeah, I'll bet.
And they do such a great job in the water, keeping it clean and all that stuff. But they're so fun.
Oh yeah, I tell you what, yeah, there'll be stories for quite a while between me and my partner, I'm sure.
So what did you do with this, Brian? Did you keep it? Is it good eating or not?
No.
Did you toss it back,
no,
baby?
I tossed it back, but I know a lot of guys, if it is a buffalo, and a lot of guys actually commercial fishermen go for those type of fish, but that's not what I was after. I was after a bass, so I said I was bound and determined I had to get a picture with it, though, after about a 30-minute fight. So I said, let's get a picture after it's already dirtied up my boat all over the carpet. I said, okay.
So I had a
little bit to get a hold of that sucker. He kind of about broke my wrist the first couple of times I tried to grab him, but he finally gave in and let me get a picture, so it worked out okay.
So who gave you the name Black Drum for the name of that fish? Was that a common name in the fishing crew you've got?
Well, I've caught them out there before.
Oh.
And they just are really, I mean, initially that fish, as you notice, is kind of silver looking, but when I first caught it, it was about as black as coal.
Oh, wow.
I don't know if it's the stress of the fight or whatever it was, really changed the coloring of the fish. So they're known to be out there in pretty good size, and so that's what I determined it was. And like I said, a couple of my fishing buddies scrutinized it enough to where they think maybe it could have been a buffalo, but it didn't matter. It's just a big fish, and that was unexpected, so it was fun.
It's good.
Did it swallow the hook? Did it swallow your pole? I mean, it could have. It's as big.
It got a hold of the crankbait pretty good. But they're almost like a carp. They don't have a really big mouth, so
yeah.
They basically, he hooked into it pretty good. He wasn't coming off, but he was definitely bending my pole for quite a while.
Well, let's talk about the bass.
I got a 19-foot boat. It pulled me through the river.
You need a bigger boat.
So what was the biggest bass you caught that day?
You know what? Not that big. Bass fishing was tough. I only had a couple fish, and they're probably a couple pounds apiece. Nothing like that. I think I came in seventh out of 40-some guys in the tournament. But it was it's all more about guys fishing together and having a good time more than it is the money part of it. It's just just a bunch of good guys that fish together.
Well, if you've been caught this big 45-pound black drum fish in the Ohio River, do you and your crew go to a bunch of different areas? You go to Arkansas, to go to Lake of the Ozarks. Where else do you guys fish?
We're mainly southern Illinois. We're based out of Belleville, Illinois, so we fish mainly all the southern and all the lakes. We fish Kentucky Lake. Our next tournament's out in Crab Orchard, out in Carbondale.
Good for you.
Kincaid. So most of the southern Illinois lakes, and a couple, the Ohio River and Kentucky Lake are 2-day tournaments because they're a little bit longer drive. So we actually make a 2-day adventure out of something like that.
Good stuff. Hey Brian, great talking to you. Congratulations on the fish. It's an impressive picture at the very least.
Well, I appreciate you guys calling, and like what my wife says, no problem with me telling fish stories, so she knows it'll be natural for this.
This one at least has a picture, so
yeah,
it's
you got proof of this one, right? Yeah, good
back
stuff.
It up, no Photoshop. Yep. All right, thanks, guys.
Brian,
calling.
We'll be in touch, brother. Thank you very much.
All right, have a good day. Bye.
Great fish story to wrap up Second Amendment Radio this week, don't you think?
It was. What a great guy. And again, if you're a hunter. Now you know a non-hunter, and if you have extra venison, hey, I got room in my freezer. But yeah, what a great show, and thanks again to Alex Salzman, man. She is just a boss.
She is.
Love talking to her.
Yeah, MissouriFirearmsCoalition.org, if you missed that address earlier, go there, check out, show them your support if you're a supporter of the Second Amendment, because they're working hard for you all the time.
And if you caught a huge fish, let us know about it, and maybe we'll have you on.
However ugly it is, we want to see it. But to the point of Alex's segment, which was in-depth and really detailed, please share this podcast with anybody that you know is a Second Amendment supporter, because we've got to get this information out. Again, the work's not done.
So you can go to the Odyssey app, and you can actually, if you missed it, you can rewind it and just hear what we just did 20 minutes ago, or you can listen all the way back 24 hours ago. And so go to the Odyssey app, that's AUDACY.com. If you already had the radio.com app, it has turned into the Odyssey app,
right?
But that's the best way to get podcasts. But it's anywhere else. It's also on the respective radio stations, KMOX or 97.1's Facebook page, and the websites. So go there and please listen.
And that is the voice of executive producer Carl Middleman.
Hey, pew pew.
And Mark Cox. My name is Bo Matthews. Have a great rest of your weekend. Thanks for listening.
You and me going fishing in the dark, lying on our backs and counting the stars where the cool grass grows.
See you, boys.
Get more at 971talk.com.
You and me go fishing in the dark, lying on starts where the cool grass grows.
Hopefully you found a place to stay cool and maybe get a line in the water this weekend. It's hot enough out there for sure. Welcome back to the Second Amendment Radio and the great outdoors. I'm Mark Cox along with Bo Matthews.
And we are going to go outdoors. You know, you scroll walls and you see people posting pictures and sometimes it catches you off guard. And so we're going to talk to a buddy of mine, a guy that I've known for years, that had the goofiest looking picture and smile on his face. This segment for the great outdoors is brought to you by Chuck's Boots in Fenton and St. Peter's, and now online at chucksboots.com. Tell them Bo sent you when you go to Chuck's Boots. Brian Davis and I are, I guess you would say, colleagues from many years. Worked together on some projects before, and so I'm scrolling my wall, Brian, the other day, and I see this fishing trip you're on with a black drum. Is that the name or the kind of the fish you're holding? Because this thing is about almost as tall as you.
Yeah, I believe so, Bo. I very well, after my fishing buddies had, you know, scrutinized the photo to make sure, you know, it was accurate.
It wasn't photoshopped.
Yeah, right. Some of the guys think it may have very well been a buffalo, but you know what? It was just a really big fish, and it was a heck of a wild ride there for a minute.
Well, I have to tell you, Mark, you may not know Brian, but Brian is the guy, and I'm not a deer hunter because I'm married to a vegetarian. I am a carnivore, but he is the guy that will go deer hunting and then give me deer meat. And you know,
nice.
After. So he's that guy.
You need a friend like that.
But yep. I don't want anything.
Everybody needs a friend like
that. I don't want a package of any of this 45-pound black drum. Number one, what were you fishing for, Brian?
I was actually fishing in a, I've been in a little club for like the last, gosh, I don't know, 25, 30 years that we go out fishing, just a bunch of guys. We're fishing for bass, so not like the big bass tournaments you see on the TV where you win a boat. You make a couple hundred dollars if you win this. But anyhow, we were fishing the Ohio River, and I was just out on the main river just kind of cranking a little crankbait along through the stumps, and I'd thrown up there, and I seen something swirl. I told my partner, I said, boy, I think I just missed something big. And so I threw back up in there, and I didn't miss it that time. He came flying out of the water, airborne, straight towards the main river. I told my partner, I said, well, hold on, here we go.
Yeah, we got to know, Brian, because the fishermen out there are going to be wondering. So if you're bass fishing, you got a fairly light pole to begin with, and what kind of pound test were you using? Were you worried at some point this thing was going to outdo your equipment?
Oh, sure. Yeah, no, it's I you know, I use a like a 6'6" medium heavy rod with a 15-pound you know, test on it. So it's pretty durable, but it's not, you know, it's not designed for 45-50 pound fish. But they had the drag set right, and you know, just quite a long little fight there, but it was, I mean, we had a lot of laughs, that's for sure, trying to get that thing in.
I bet. And then when you saw it, when you got it out of the water and in your hands, I mean, 45-pound fish, when you're bent, you know, over the side of a boat to get that out, that's some work. Did you have a little help?
Well, I have a dip net, but it annihilated that dip net. I had to put it in head first, and it ripped half the dip net apart. So I just grabbed the dip net on both sides and just kind of flopped it up on my deck. And
there's some there's some goofy looking fish out there that are so fun to catch. We've got carp in our pond, and I swear it's about it's in relation to you and your black drum fish. It's probably 3/4 of the size of my wife, or the height of my wife standing there. So these things are about 3.5 foot long, but they are so fun to catch.
Yeah, I'll bet.
And they do such a great job in the water, keeping it clean and all that stuff. But they're so fun.
Oh yeah, I tell you what, yeah, it'll be stories for quite a while between me and my partner. I'm sure.
So what did you do with this, Brian? Did you keep it? Is it good eating or not? Did you toss it back, maybe?
I tossed it back. But I know a lot of guys, if it is a buffalo, and a lot of guys actually commercial fishermen go for those type of fish, but that's not what I was after. I was after a bass. So I was bound and determined I had to get a picture with it, though, after about a 30-minute fight. So I said, let's get a picture after it's already dirtied up my boat all over the carpet. I said, okay.
So
it took me a little bit to get a hold of that sucker. He kind of about broke my wrist the first couple of times I tried to grab him, but he finally gave in and let me get a picture. So it worked out okay.
So who gave you the name Black Drum for the name of that fish? Was that a common name in the fishing crew you've got?
Well, I've caught them. I've caught them out there before.
Oh.
And they just are really, I mean, initially that fish, as you notice, is kind of silver looking. But when I first caught it, it was about as black as coal.
Oh, wow.
I don't know if it's the stress of the fight or whatever it was, really changed the coloring of the fish. So they're known to be out there in pretty good size. And so that's what I determined it was. And like I said, a couple of my fishing buddies scrutinized it enough to where they think maybe it could have been a buffalo. But it didn't matter. It's just a big fish. And it was unexpected. So it was fun.
It's good.
Did it swallow the hook? Did it swallow your pole? I mean, it could have. It's as big.
They got a hold of the crankbait pretty good. But they're almost like a carp. They don't have a really big mouth. So yeah. They basically, he hooked into it pretty good. He wasn't coming off, but he was definitely bending my pole for quite a while.
Well, let's talk about the bass.
Boat. I got a 19-foot boat. It pulled me through the river.
You need a bigger boat.
So what was the biggest bass you caught that day?
You know what? Not that big. The bass fishing was tough. I only had a couple fish, and they're probably a couple pounds apiece. Nothing like that. I think I came in seventh out of 40-some guys in the tournament. But it was it's all more about guys fishing together and having a good time more than it is the money part of it. It's just just a bunch of good guys that fish together.
Well, if you've been caught this big 45-pound black drum fish in the Ohio River, do you and your crew go to a bunch of different areas? You go to Arkansas, do you go to Lake of the Ozarks? Where else do you guys fish?
We're mainly southern Illinois. We're based out of Belleville, Illinois. So we fish mainly all the southern and all the lakes. We fish Kentucky Lake. Our next tournament's out in Crab Orchard out in Carbondale.
Good for you.
Kincaid. So most of the southern Illinois lakes and a couple. The Ohio River and Kentucky Lake are two-day tournaments because they're a little bit longer drive. So we actually make a two-day adventure out of something like that.
Good stuff. Hey, Brian, great talking to you. Congratulations on the fish. It's an impressive picture at the very least.
Well, I appreciate you guys calling, and like my wife said, no problem with me telling fish stories, so she knows it'll be a natural for this.
Well, this one at least has a picture, so
yeah,
it's not
proof
a fish
this one, right? Yeah, good
back
stuff.
It up. No Photoshop. All right, thanks, guys, for
Brian,
calling.
We'll be in touch, brother. Thank you very much.
All right, have a good day. Bye.
Great fish story to wrap up Second Amendment Radio this week, don't you think?
It was. What a great guy. And again, if you're a hunter. Now you know a non-hunter, and if you have extra venison, hey, I got room in my freezer. But yeah, what a great show, and thanks again to Alex Salzman, man. She is just a boss.
She is.
Love talking to her.
Yeah, MissouriFirearmsCoalition.org, if you missed that address earlier, go there, check out. Show them your support if you're a supporter of the Second Amendment, because they're working hard for you all the time.
And if you caught a huge fish, let us know about it, and maybe we'll have you on.
However ugly it is, we want to see it. But to the point of Alex's segment, which was in-depth and really detailed, please share this podcast with anybody that you know is a Second Amendment supporter, because we've got to get this information out. Again, the work's not done.
So you can go to the Odyssey app, and you can actually, if you missed it, you can rewind it and just hear what we just did 20 minutes ago, or you can listen all the way back 24 hours ago. And so go to the Odyssey app, that's AUDACY.com. If you already had the radio.com app, it has turned into the Odyssey app,
right?
But that's the best way to get podcasts. But it's anywhere else. It's also on the respective radio stations, KMOX or 97.1's Facebook page, and the websites. So go there and please listen.
And that is the voice of executive producer Carl Middleman.
Hey, pew pew.
And Mark Cox. My name is Bo Matthews. Have a great rest of your weekend. Thanks for listening.
You and me going fishing in the dark, lying on our backs and counting the stars where the cool grass grows.
See you, boys.
Get more at 971talk.com.